I'm Ellie Harrison, and I run the Bring Back British Rail campaign and have been doing so since 2009. It was set up to just popularise the idea of renationalising our national rail network. 2009, it would have been 15 years since privatisation. More than that, actually. So it was starting to kind of get lost, this history that we actually used to have a publicly owned rail network, and especially for younger people who just didn't ever know that British Rail existed and didn't know something that they could demand that we move forward to in the future.
Now, we've got at the moment three kind of either ongoing or threatened strikes. We've got the problems down in Brighton and in the south of England with I think it's Southern Railway, or what used to be Arriva, I think they called it for a while, and it's some private company that runs the railways in the south of England, south of
Govia, it's called.
Oh, is it? Okay, Govia now. It's like Michael Govia. But anyway, some private firm that seems to be annoying people down there. The main reason for the strike, which the BBC never tell you, is that they're trying to remove guards from trains. I mean, that just puts all the responsibility on the driver, which is extremely difficult, particularly late at night, and especially on packed trains. And then there's the East Coast mainline, and also Eurostar, which is, you know, the trains that go under the Channel Tunnel. So why do you think recently, just in the last few weeks, we've had all these, you know, I suppose people kind of tearing their hair out and saying, well, we've had enough of this private rail system?
Yeah. I think there's lots of things happening. I mean, I think most of the problems that we've got at the moment can be traced back to the failings of privatisation. And I guess increasing inequality on the railways, where you've got these fat cat bosses. And the example you mentioned, Govia, who run the biggest franchise, the biggest of all the rail franchises, because it was merged in 2014. It's called TSTN, which stands for the Thames Link, Great Northern and Southern franchises all rolled into one. And that's owned, Govia is owned by two companies, one called Go Ahead, which is actually a UK-based company, but the CEO of Go Ahead gets £2 million a year. And the other part of Govia is owned by the French state, owned by SNCF or their operations overseas, which is called Keolis. So actually some of the ticket prices and the profiteering that's going on across that whole big franchise in the southeast is going back to subsidise French railways. So what happened particularly on Southern is I think there were a lot of upgrades needed doing on that line. So the government just agreed, rather than award the contract as a normal rail franchise, as they call it, they do it as a management contract where they would just pay a set fee and Govia would run the service for that fee. So they realised, I think, because they're set up, obviously, as a profit-making enterprise, that if they cut services, then they could make more profit out of that set fee. So that's what they've decided to do up to a certain point. And at the same time, you know, you've got all these arguments about technological developments that mean perhaps we don't need so many staff on the railways. But, you know, you can't just continue to lay off more and more people, because people need jobs, and actually working on the railway can be a rewarding job that people can take pride in and take pride in providing a good service for passengers. But of course Bring Back British Rail argues that they're only really ever going to get that if they know that they're really serving the passengers and the people of Britain under a publicly owned railway, and not serving these fat cat bosses who are walking away with £2 million salaries.
What about the East Coast Main Line then?
Well, the East Coast Main Line is an interesting story because that was run by, I mean, as far back as I can remember, a company called GNER. That changed hands, I guess, probably about 2004 or five to National Express, who, again, another privately owned transport company, ran it until 2009, and then they decided, oh, actually, we can't make as much of a profit on this as we thought we could, so we're not going to bother anymore. And at that point, literally, they walked away. So the government had no choice but to take that rail line, which is one of the, you know, it's a crucial north to south link that go from London all the way to Edinburgh. They took it into public ownership, and it was run successfully by a pseudo private company called Directly Operated Railways, which was wholly owned by the government. They ran it until 2015, and in that time had record passenger satisfaction, and they also generated a profit of nearly £1 billion, which was all returned to the Treasury to go into subsidising other services. So that East Coast line is all the proof that Bring Back British Rail and all the unions and all the passengers and all of us know need to say actually public ownership is the best way of running a rail franchise, or running the whole railway, not just one franchise, running the whole railway. And we've proved it with the East Coast, so let's forget the failed project of privatisation, and forget running these stupid franchising competitions as well, which cost £45 million per competition. And seeing that there's 11 of these competitions happening in the next 5 years, that's a hell of a lot of money just being wasted on going through all these really tedious bids, which are all from the same transport companies, because they're just, you know, there aren't actually enough companies set up on such a scale that they can bid for running a rail franchise. So, yeah, the East Coast is really interesting. And what happened in 2015, so quite appropriately, on the 1st of April, was that the Department for Transport decided to give away the publicly owned East Coast Railway to Virgin Trains East Coast, which is part owned by Virgin Trains and part owned by Stagecoach. And so for the last year, they've been running it. And of course, passenger satisfaction has nosedived as a result. The latest passenger satisfaction surveys show people are not happy with this new service. Yeah, so the East Coast is an interesting story, but you think that this government wanted to reprivatise it as quickly as possible because it was an embarrassment, because it was all the proof we needed that public ownership is the most sensible, profitable, efficient way to run the railway. And that's what the majority of passengers want.
Also, what about First Group and First Great Western? They've kind of got rid of the First from their trains now. And they're trying to make out, I think, that it was Brunel's company or whatever, that, you know, from the 1800s that's running it now. They've got a kind of green trains and a green logo, and you removing First from their kind of corporate identity. But here in Bristol, we're very much reliant on this service backwards and forwards to London. What are the customer satisfaction like, and what stories have you got from this franchise?
Yeah, well, First Group, I mean, I actually live up in Glasgow, but I travel all around the UK for my work because I work freelance. So I have been on every single one of these franchises, which is one reason why I started the campaign. And First, I think, are an interesting company. They are UK-based. They're based in Aberdeen, actually. And they used to have a lot more of the franchises than they do now. They used to run the whole of ScotRail. And I think that they also made a bid to take over the West Coast Main Line from Richard Branson as well. And there was a big fiasco in 2012 with that, because First Group got one of the figures in their franchise bid wrong. Apparently a zero was missed out, so one of the calculations was off by a factor of 10. So the DfT, the Department for Transport, had awarded them that West Coast franchise, and then Richard Branson made a legal challenge. This whole fiasco wasted £55 million, and in the end, they just allowed Richard Branson to carry on running the West Coast Main Line. So First, since then, I think have kind of lost quite a lot of their franchises. They're not running ScotRail anymore. That's gone to Abellio, who are owned wholly by the Dutch state, actually. So they're now just left with two franchises. They're left with First Great Western, which is the one that you guys rely on, and they're left with the First Trans-Pennine Express. But what they decided to do last year was to rebrand both of these franchises to remove the word First, as you've rightly pointed out. And I actually see this as a success of the Bring Back British Rail campaign, in a way, because one of the things that we tried to do from the beginning was to expose what was really happening with the railways for people who don't quite understand, and quite understandably don't understand, because it's a ridiculously complex system. It doesn't need to be this complex, and it's almost overly complex to bamboozle people so that they're totally confused about who's actually profiting and who's actually accountable for their rail services. So First decided to sort of go back to the good old days with their branding, and with the Great Western Railway, to almost claim that they were as good as the good old public service days of old. But of course, people, I think, were smart enough to see through this. And we did a lot of public awareness about it. Colleagues that we work with in the campaign called We Own It, who campaign for public ownership of all public services, they did a lot of public awareness about it. And hopefully people aren't going to be taken in by it and still realise that there's a lot of money being creamed off from their ticket prices by the First Group, which is completely unnecessary. And actually, on our website, one of the things that we've been building over the last year is what we call our franchises initiative. So we decided that actually the railway, because of privatisation, is broken up into all these little pieces around the country. But actually, that could be quite useful as a campaigning tactic if we can link up with grassroots groups in different parts of the country who are attacking these different private companies running their rail services. Then that becomes quite a good campaigning tactic. So we've been building these fact files about all of the different private companies and trying to encourage people in different parts of the country to get on board. And because we've got such a huge network now, more than 100,000 people following us. So the idea really is to encourage campaigns for public ownership of railways in different parts of the country, and to use our network to help support and promote those activities. So there is going to be some action happening in Bristol on Tuesday the 16th of August. Our colleagues at the Friends of Suburban Bristol Railways, who you might know, are going to be at Bristol Temple Meads on the 16th, handing out Action for Rail postcards, promoting the public ownership of the First Great Western Line, and of course the public ownership of all of the railways. Because one of the big arguments is that actually so much money is wasted on the railways because it's fractured and split up into all these tiny little pieces. And because you've got so much duplication of, well, duplication of CEO salaries, duplication of marketing budgets, you've got lack of sharing of information, you've got all these competing bids to take over the franchises. The simplest way to run a railway is to cut out all of that and reunify it into one national rail network. That's what's going to make it most efficient. That's what's going to make it most cost effective. And that's what's going to make it work most effectively, because we'll have 100% cooperation between all the different parts. And that's what you need to run a national rail network. So that's what we're fighting for.
Ellie, what about you? What got you interested in this?
Well, I got into it. You know, I wasn't a train geek, I didn't think.
You're not a train spotter?
I'm not a train spotter. Maybe I've become a bit of a train spotter over the last 7 years. But I was a pissed off passenger. I actually, Bring Back British Rail came about when I moved from Nottingham, where I used to live, to Glasgow, where I live now. And because I had a lot of friends still living in England, I was doing a lot of travelling. And it was then that I first realised quite how efficient the privatised rail network was, because you would have to make that journey between Glasgow and Nottingham go on three different franchises sometimes. And they just didn't care if one was late and you missed a connection and that would delay you by an hour. And then buying the tickets, I was always trying to plan my life like 3 months in advance so I could buy a ticket that I could actually afford. And I just started to think, why is nobody kicking up a fuss about this? You know, I actually have memories. I was born in 79, so I was 15 when the railways were privatised, and I had no clue what was happening. But I do have memories from the 80s of going on the intercity, British Rail intercity lines, and just the simplicity, and, you know, also the comfort of being in different parts of the country and recognising that British Rail logo, knowing where you are, with the train staff, the uniforms, the colours of the trains, just that simplicity.
Well, I'll tell you another thing that's changed a lot, and that is that they're packing people in, aren't they? One of the biggest problems here in the Paddington to Bristol, Temple Meads and down into Cornwall route is overcrowding, particularly between London, Reading, down that down end of the line, and everyone is packed in a tiny little space. The carriages, I mean, they could put double the number of trains on if people actually were going to get seats. Overcrowding seems almost like they designed these new trains, or the carriages have been redesigned to pack as many people in, like cattle trucks almost.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, so many of the problems we have on the railways are the result of what happens when you introduce a profit motive into an industry that is a natural monopoly, where there is, which is an essential public service, where there is absolutely no need, and it makes no sense for there to be a profit motive. Because if you look at, you know, if you're going to run one train and you want to make a profit out of it, then you want every single seat packed. You don't want to be running half-empty trains where people are sitting comfortably. You want every single seat to be full, and you want people standing in the corridors so you can maximise your profits. So I think that's probably the logic. What's going on? I think the train companies are just pushing it as far as they can go. You know, they're pushing the rail fares up as far as they can go. Some of the rail fares are regulated. Some of them aren't regulated at all. So they push, cram to maximise their profits, because that's what their profit-making companies are programmed to do. So I just think removing that unnecessary aspect of the railway is going to make things, you know, it's going to make passengers feel like they're actually being treated with respect on the railways, and to make rail staff actually feel like they are working for an organisation that they believe in and that respects them.
I wonder if, you know, you're as amazed as I am when I get on one of these packed trains at Paddington and there's all these people standing up, that they don't simply sort of swarm down into the first class carriage and sit down in one of those nice comfy seats rather than sit there obediently standing up through, you know, maybe half an hour, 45 minutes of their journey.
Well, I do. You know, because I've always got my Bring Back British Rail t-shirt on anyway, and whenever I travel, and I've always got my Bring Back British Rail rail card wallet, which you can get on our website if you're interested, and all proceeds go towards the campaign. But I quite often just show those to the staff, especially, you know, if I'm sitting, you know, if I was sitting in first class because there weren't any seats in standard class, or if somebody had the cheek to challenge me and say, well, you've got one specific type of ticket and you're not allowed to use it on this train, and all those nonsense rules that result from a privatised and fractured rail network, I just show them my Bring Back British Rail railcard wallet and say, didn't used to be like this. Didn't used to be like this. And quite often they'll just let me get away with it because all the rail workers support it anyway. The only people that don't are the fat cat managers and CEOs who are profiting from the mess.
Sounds to me like it's quite well worth listeners buying one of these from your website, these little wallets.
So
just do you want to just round up by letting us know whereabouts we can find you online and how to get in touch?
Yeah, sure. So 16th of August is the day of action. Go out to Bristol Temple Meads. You'll see activists out handing out postcards. And find us online, bringbackbritishrail.org. And on Facebook, if you're on Facebook, just search for Bring Back British Rail. There's a huge number of supporters and lots of interesting active debate happening on our Facebook page and on Twitter, Bring Back BR. Yeah.
Ellie Harrison from bringbackbritishrail.org. Thanks very much for joining us on Dialect.
Thank you.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk.